It's 4 hours Universal Time. Stay tuned for Daybreak Africa coming up after these latest world news headlines.
I'm Victor Beatty reporting. Turkey's President Recep Tayyip Erdogan told U.S. television viewers the U.S. should extradite a Muslim cleric over his alleged involvement in last week's failed military coup. Fethullah Gulen is in self-imposed exile in Pennsylvania. He's denied any involvement in the coup attempt. Yüksel Alp Aslan Dogan is a Gulen advisor.
He actually said that he feels insulted by this accusation because he has been a victim of 4 military coups in Turkey before. He is a man of peace. He defended peace against terrorist groups like ISIS. He condemned violence of all kinds throughout his life.
White House spokesman Josh Earnest said the U.S. is awaiting Turkey's formal extradition request, said it must fulfill specific requirements.
There is a clear, well-established, mutually agreed-upon process for considering those kinds of requests. And there are essentially two factors. The first is the request would be evaluated to determine whether or not it was related to crimes that are covered by the extradition treaty. And then second, there would be an evaluation made jointly by the Department of State and by the Department of Justice to determine whether or not the evidentiary standard that's described in the treaty is met.
Turkey's prime minister has promised to rethink Ankara's relationship with Washington if Gulen is not extradited. Turkey, a NATO member, is a key partner in U.S.-led efforts to defeat the Islamic State group. Popular South African race driver Gugu Zulu died early Monday while trying to reach the summit of Tanzania's nearly 5,900-meter-tall Mount Kilimanjaro as part of a charity drive for underprivileged girls for the Trek for Mandela, an effort by the Nelson Mandela Foundation. The 38-year-old Zulu climbing with his wife and a team of others when he experienced breathing problems. This is VOA News. Police officials in Baton Rouge, Louisiana, said a black former U.S. Marine, Gavin Long, identified as the gunman who shot and killed three policemen and wounded three others, planned his attack and carried out the assassinations. Colonel Mike Edmondson heads the Louisiana State Police.
There is no doubt whatsoever that these officers were intentionally targeted and assassinated. It was a calculated act against those who work to protect his community every single day.
The 29-year-old Long was killed in a shootout with police. He appears to have used social media extensively and is posting sometime described violence as an answer to what he viewed as the oppression of African Americans. Baton Rouge was the scene of a fatal police shooting of a black man nearly 2 weeks before. The Republican National Convention ended its first day in Cleveland, Ohio, hearing from a number of speakers, including the wife of presumptive presidential nominee Melania Trump.
I'm so proud of your choice for President of the United States, my husband, Donald J. Trump.
Delegates also heard a series of speakers denounce Trump's likely opponent, former Secretary of State Hillary Clinton. Earlier, the convention was engulfed in controversy as Trump opponents attempted but failed to get a floor vote on convention rules. The Democratic National Convention scheduled next week in Philadelphia. African Union leaders meeting Monday in Kigali approved a proposal to deploy a regional protection force to South Sudan. AU Peace and Security Commissioner Smail Shirgi said it will go beyond the UN peacekeeping mandate.
We all agree that the situation is urgent, but I was saying within the UN mission. So I think in the coming days, the Security Council will meet to discuss this proposal. And when it comes to generating the force, that's our responsibility, and we are ready for that.
A shaky ceasefire is holding in South Sudan after fresh violence between rival factions loyal to President Salva Kiir and First Vice President Riek Machar broke out 2 weeks ago, leaving at least 300 dead, thousands displaced. Shirgi said the proposed AU force will be similar to the UN intervention brigade used against rebels in Democratic Republic of Congo. With the Olympic Games in Rio de Janeiro just 3 weeks away, the International Olympic Committee Monday promised tough sanctions after a report found Moscow concealed hundreds of positive doping tests in many competitions preceding the Sochi Winter Games. The IOC has not yet made clear whether it intends to bow to growing pressure to ban all Russian athletes from the Olympic Games. Bans have already been imposed on Russian weightlifters and track and field athletes. Nearly a week after losing a historic case over its territorial claims in the South China Sea, China is closing off part of the region for drills beginning Tuesday.
That's the latest world news from VOA.
Good morning, Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Bate in Washington. Today's Tuesday, July 19th, and here are some of the stories we are covering. Some Africans are claiming victory after African leaders failed to choose a new chairperson of the African Union Commission.
I am very, very happy that African leaders listen to what we have been saying, that Africa should not disgrace itself by electing representatives of dictatorial regimes in Africa.
That's Nigerian-born Chika Onyeni, publisher and editor-in-chief of the African Sun-Times newspaper. African leaders support a call for a robust African peacekeeping force in South Sudan. The 21st International AIDS Conference has opened in Durban, South Africa. And Zambian lawyers hold a peace march today as pre-election violence intensifies.
The Law Association of Zambia has noted over the past 5 years an escalation in political violence. We're seeing some scuffles between the two main political parties, which are the ruling Patriotic Front and the United Party for National Development.
Linda Kasonde is president of the Law Association of Zambia. Cameroonian hostages are freed from a CAR rebel group. Four Kenyan police are charged with murder, and Zambian pastor and activist Evan Manwawere will explain why he is in South Africa. Those stories plus our listener of the day are coming up on Daybreak Africa. The African Union has backed a request for African troops with a robust mandate to reinforce UN peacekeepers in South Sudan. The AU summit meeting in Rwanda's capital, Kigali, approved the request, which will next go to the UN Security Council. Nick Long has more from Kigali, Rwanda.
The African heads of state were responding to a communique on South Sudan put out after a meeting with regional leaders and the United Nations on Saturday. The communique issued by IGAD Plus, a body representing East African countries plus Rwanda, South Africa, Nigeria and Algeria, called on the UN Security Council to extend the UN mission in South Sudan, UNMISS, with a revised mandate. That revised mandate, it specified, should include the deployment of a regional protection force to separate South Sudan's warring parties. AU Commissioner for Peace and Security, Smail Chergi, confirmed the AU support for the IGAD Plus request.
There is the idea of promoting deployment of an African force within UN. So all those questions have been accepted by the summit itself, and you can find them in the decision that will be made public.
Chergi told journalists the AU envisions sending an African force with a robust peace enforcement mandate to South Sudan, like the African Intervention Brigade in Eastern Democratic Republic of Congo. There's no time frame as yet for deployment, as that will depend on UN support for the proposal. Chergi suggested UN peacekeeping missions in general need forces with tougher mandates.
But I think today we see the necessity of revisiting, in fact, most of the mandates of UN missions in Africa. You see, North Mali is the same problem, because UN does not have the mandate to impose peace. They are there when there is peace to keep. And that's the added value of African troops and African countries. They are really to engage in very difficult situations.
Chergi acknowledged the government of South Sudan has said it does not want more foreign troops in the country. He said this issue would need to be negotiated. The AU summit, which closed Monday, also discussed peace and security in Burundi, Libya and Somalia, and the threat of terrorism, all in some detail. A decision was taken to set up a counter-terrorism fund to which African countries would make voluntary contributions. Earlier, the question of the next AU Commission chairperson was put off for the time being after no candidate received the required two-thirds majority in two rounds of voting. As for the question of Morocco's possible readmission to the AU, Chergi said nothing had been said about this officially at the summit. Nick Long for VOA News, Kigali.
Some Africans are claiming victory after African leaders meeting in Kigali, Rwanda, failed to choose a new chairperson of the African Union Commission. This means current president Nkosazana Dlamini Zuma, who was due to step down after serving her two terms, will have to continue on until the next summit in January. None of the three candidates from Uganda, Equatorial Guinea, and Botswana could get the two-thirds majority needed to win. Nigerian-born Chika Onyeni, publisher and editor-in-chief of the African Sun Times newspaper, says he's happy the candidates from Uganda and Equatorial Guinea did not win because their countries are led by dictators. He says ordinary Africans should, from now on, be vocal and involved about how the African Union chooses its leaders.
It was the greatest news that we received that the election has been postponed because none of the three candidates were able to win two-thirds of the vote to be elected chairperson of the African Union Commission. And part of the reason is the campaign we mounted, including you putting us on the radio, on your program, to talk about the fact that Africa should not disgrace itself by electing representatives of dictatorial regimes in Africa. I am very, very happy that African leaders listen to what we have been saying.
Now, so what does that mean now, hereafter? Do you think Africans, ordinary Africans, need to be more involved in the future?
This campaign has shown that African media has a great deal to play. As the chairperson of the African Union, Dr. Nkosazana Dlamini Zuma, said, African journalists should be telling the truth, and we are telling the truth. We are saying that Africa should not reward these dictatorial regimes by electing one of its candidates as chairperson of the African Union Commission, because that gives a very, very bad image for the continent. For instance, the candidate for Equatorial Guinea, the president, Mbasogi, has stayed in office for 36 years. And in Uganda, you have Museveni just held another sham election, imprisoned the opposition leader before the election. What kind of election is that? That is why we don't need these countries, we don't need their representatives to become chairperson of the African Union Commission.
Let me say that on the eve of the vote, I spoke with Uganda's Minister for Foreign Affairs, Okello Oyem. He was confident that his candidate, Dr. Specioza Wanderi Kazibwe, would win. What happened?
The thing is that she secured the least vote, and she was the first to drop out, leaving the candidatures of Botswana and Equatorial Guinea to battle it out. Then African leaders decided to abstain rather than vote because they said these two people don't have the kind of experience that the position needs.
That's Nigerian-born Chika Onyeni, publisher and editor-in-chief of the African Sun Times newspaper. He was speaking with me from New York City. 5 days hardly seem enough to cover all the topics that scientists, activists, and experts are raising at the 21st International AIDS Conference, which opened Monday in Durban, South Africa. VOA's Anita Powell talked to some of the conference attendees about their expectations and has this report.
Prevention, better treatments, social justice, and maybe one day, a cure. It is a lot to cover in 5 days. The International AIDS Conference has come a long way since 1985, when it was a gathering of 2,000 scientists in Atlanta. As the 21st conference opens Monday in Durban, South Africa, the fight against the epidemic has become more than just a fight against a disease. It's also a quest for social change. But science still dominates, and dozens of complex sessions in coming days aim to unpack the difficult science behind the HIV virus. Edwin Sanders, a religious leader who is involved with the Legacy Project of the HIV Vaccine Network in the U.S. state of Tennessee, says this is an exciting time to be at the AIDS conference.
Well, I think one of the things that is an issue that will translate into something that's significant in terms of our fight against the disease is the way in which there are some new strategies that are being put forth that I think will represent an opportunity to begin to further expand the ways in which we are looking at trying to develop vaccines and other kinds of effective biomedical responses.
The conference comes on the tail of positive scientific news, with encouraging prevention studies showing potential to stop the spread of the virus. The United Nations AIDS Agency has also recently unveiled a new five-year plan that aims to end the deadly epidemic by the year 2030. Their 90-90-90 plan aims for 90% of people living with HIV to know their virus status, 90% of HIV-positive people to be on treatment, and 90% of people on treatment to show suppressed viral loads. This plan, if realized, would prevent nearly 28 million new HIV infections and 21 million AIDS-related deaths worldwide. But the AIDS epidemic has also exposed numerous social issues. Rain Cortez, a Filipino activist, says she revels in the acceptance she feels here as a transgendered woman. Still, she says, she wants specific treatment guidelines for transgendered people.
What we're looking for is providing more HIV-specific, trans-specific programs, specifically in the Southeast Asian region. There are many developments already in the developed countries, in the States, in the Europe, but nothing yet is being brought into the Philippines or even in the neighboring countries.
This year's conference also puts a spotlight on the youth. AIDS is now the leading cause of death for Africa's teenagers. That adds to a tripling of adolescent HIV deaths worldwide since 2000. Anita Powell, VOA News, Durban, South Africa.
You're listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Barty in Washington. Today's Tuesday, July 19th. Daybreak Africa time is coming up at 17 minutes past the hour. 11 Cameroonians, including the mayor of the northern town of Lago, have been freed from captivity after they were seized by a rebel group from the Central African Republic more than a year ago. Reporter Moki Edwin Kinzeka talked with the hostages about the conditions under which they were detained and files this report from Yaounde.
Government ministers, family members, and a crowd of onlookers turned out in Cameroon's capital Monday to receive Mama Abakai and 10 others who returned from the troubled Central African Republic after 16 months of captivity. Mama Abakai says they were seized by armed men from the East Cameroonian villages of Gabio and Yokoshaya and taken across the border to the bushes of the CAR, where they were detained under very difficult conditions.
Vous êtes enchaînés deux à deux. Vous avez un litre d'eau à partager à deux toute la journée.
He says they were divided into groups of two and chained from the leg and around the abdomen and at times hands. He says two people were given a liter of water to share for 24 hours and they ate the same meal once a day for 18 months. Abakai said two of the hostages died in these deplorable conditions and expressed gratitude to God and the government of Cameroon for helping to save their lives. He added that he did not know if ransoms were paid, although the hostage takers asked for money. 48-year-old Dauda Abdullahi says the armed men told them they were members of a movement fighting for liberation of the Central African Republic. He says they promised to kill the hostages if the government of Cameroon refused to pay undisclosed sums of money to secure their release. He says a group of soldiers armed with rifles, claiming to belong to the Democratic Front for Central African People, led by Abubakar Siddiqui, took them to the bush where they were tortured every morning. Cameroon Minister of Defense Joseph Betty Asomo, who received the freed hostages, refused to comment on how much Cameroon paid to release the hostages, but said negotiations were carried out following instructions from President Paul Biya. He says President Biya discreetly and efficiently coordinated all the processes that led to their release. He says their main preoccupation now is to take care of their health needs and psychological care, and that Cameroonians are rejoicing that their compatriots are back home from captivity. Moki Edwin Kinzeka for VOA News, Yaounde.
Zambian lawyers are marching today for peace ahead of the country's August 11th presidential election. This comes as pre-election violence has escalated in recent months. Linda Kasonde, president of the Law Association of Zambia, says the march is non-political and is intended to highlight the growing political violence and intolerance in Zambia. She says the association has been concerned lately about the breakdown of law and order in Zambia.
The Law Association of Zambia has noted over the past 5 years an escalation in political violence. We're seeing some sort of scuffles between the two main political parties, which are the ruling Patriotic Front and the United Party for National Development. Sometime, I think it was last week, the opposition UPND was scheduled to have a rally in two townships, which was cancelled by the police at very short notice. And subsequently, members of the UPND took to the streets in their party regalia to protest against that. And the police responded by firing rubber bullets into the crowd, and one lady was killed, you know, which raised a lot of questions in terms of how the police managed the situation and how, in fact, that loss of life occurred. We can't let the situation deteriorate. We have general elections coming up on the 11th of August, and we all want peaceful, free and fair elections that are credible. And if this situation of political scuffles continues between the main political parties, then we will have a problem. So basically we're saying as an association that enough is enough, something has to be done. And basically the march is a demonstration to our political party leaders that we're not happy, we're not satisfied with what they're doing to resolve the situation, and that they need to do something to ensure that the situation comes to an end.
As you mentioned, your country is going to election early next month. That means, you said, the country is right now politically charged.
Mm.
You don't think that some might consider your march as a political event?
No, the Law Association of Zambia is a non-partisan organization. When we do take a stance, it's based on our understanding of the facts and our interpretation of the law. We never side with any political party or one or the other, because, you know, certainly we would lose our credibility as an association if we did.
If you think the parties themselves cannot make an inroad in terms of curbing this police violence that you mentioned, what makes you think that your organization can make a difference?
Well, the truth of the matter is we don't know if it can make a difference, but somebody's got to take a stand, and that's what we're doing. I think, hopefully, that the numbers of people that turn up will speak to how seriously that the citizens take this issue. The police could be more professional in how they do things. There does tend to be a bias against opposition parties in terms of how they enforce the law. And really what we want is a non-partisan professional police service as much as possible.
Linda Kasonde is president of the Law Association of Zambia. She was speaking with me from the capital, Lusaka. Four Kenyan police have been charged with murder for allegedly killing a human rights attorney, his client, and their taxi driver who had picked them up after a court hearing last month. Jill Craig has more from Nairobi.
The next chapter of a high-profile police extrajudicial killing case played out Monday in Nairobi when four Kenyan police officers were charged in the High Court with the murder of Nairobi-based lawyer Willie Kimani, his client Joseph Atmuenda, and their taxi driver Joseph Morori. Law Society of Kenya President Isaac Okero says his group has taken a very keen interest in the case, but they know it is one among many extrajudicial killing cases in the country.
This one is of great significance to us because it is the first one in which we have lost a member of the bar. And that's an indication to the members of the bar and to the members of the Kenyan public that even the agents of the advancement of the rule of law are now vulnerable to this sort of action.
Kimani, Mwenda, and Morori were abducted and reportedly taken to a police compound on June 23rd after a court hearing in which Kimani was defending his client against what they said were false police charges stemming from an accidental shooting of Mwenda by a police officer in 2015. Their bodies were pulled from a river roughly 70 kilometers from Nairobi about a week later. Autopsy results presented in court revealed that the men suffered signs of torture. Mwenda suffered crushed testicles and a fractured skull, while the other two men had injuries sustained by a blunt object.
The brutality of the manner in which these three young men were killed appears to have been intended to send a warning out to any other Kenyans who want to challenge the impunity of these officers
The incident sparked protests by human rights groups and the Law Society of Kenya, as well as a call for a week-long national attorney boycott. Jill Craig, VOA News, Nairobi.
After giving hope to millions of Zimbabweans reeling from a depressed economy, Pastor Evan Mawarere quietly left Zimbabwe last week for South Africa, leading to speculation that he had abandoned his growing number of followers. Some news reports even suggested that Mawarere was an imposter acting on behalf of some ZANU-PF followers with the goal to chip away support from the opposition. But Mawarere says he has been meeting with Zimbabweans in South Africa to find the way forward for their beleaguered country.
I think let me categorically say that that is not true. I've traveled on a scheduled trip. I do regular trips to South Africa and even beyond, and this was a scheduled trip that I had already on my books.
When do you think you are going to be back in Zimbabwe?
Oh, I'll be back there pretty soon. I think, for me, those are personal details pertaining to my travel. But it won't be long until I'll be back.
There have also been reports in the media that you are probably a ZANU-PF agent.
Again, I've heard and seen some of those going around. And it's unfortunate that when something happens in Zimbabwe that people don't understand. There are a few people that want to put, a spin to it. Again, let me say this. I have nothing else to say in terms of disproving that. But I am neither an agent of ZANU-PF, neither am I an agent of the West, the UK or the Europe, and neither am I an agent of the opposition parties in Zimbabwe. I'm a citizen of Zimbabwe, and that is as simple as it is.
There have also been reports that you are probably heading here to the US. Is that true?
No, heading out there has always been part of my business. I'm not heading there right away. I'll be going back to Zimbabwe first before I make a trip out to the USA for a church business, which I regularly do. But heading out there in terms of asylum, as has been reported, is not true. That is not part of my plan. I have committed no crime in Zimbabwe. I am an upstanding citizen who abides by the law and has done everything according to the Constitution. So I have no reason at all to be skipping or to be running off to any other country.
There have been questions that have been asked about what you eventually want to see in Zimbabwe. Is it a new president, or you still want the same status quo but with the five demands that you have put forward?
I think the five demands we put across are a starting point to some of the changes that we want to see in Zimbabwe. Ultimately, the core of this flag is about seeing a better Zimbabwe. It's about citizens getting involved in building a better Zimbabwe. And I think for me, going ahead or looking ahead, Zimbabwe cannot look different if we continue with the same ideas and the same people. So effectively, what we are looking for as this flag going forward into the future and as the elections come is a chance for a new set of thinkers, a new set of leaders to take charge of our nation. It's a right that we have to be able to choose that new set of people to govern us, and we want a chance to do that.
That was Pastor and activist Evan Mawarere of Zimbabwe. He was speaking from Johannesburg, South Africa, with reporter Chris Gandhi of View Zimbabwe program. And that's it for this Tuesday, July 19th edition of Daybreak Africa. Join us again tomorrow for more Africa news and features right here on the English to Africa service of the Voice of America. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa crew, producer Nicole Beckford, reporters Peter Clotty and Ricky Stryak, along with our engineer Charles Hall, I'm James Butt in Washington, wishing all of you in Africa a very, very good day.
Tuesday on Health Chat, host Lenore Modu takes a look at HIV, AIDS, challenges, and progress made to combat the disease. For your questions, email us at healthchat@voanews.com. You can also reach us by phone to leave a message or to participate in the program. We will call you back. Dial the international code for the United States, then dial 202-205-9942. The country code is 1. Dial 45 after you hear the station ID. For listeners to call during the show, our telephone number is 202-619-3111. Health Chat this Tuesday at 1730 UTC right here on VOA Africa.